Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 4:26 p.m. on Wednesday, March 15, 2017. Present today, we have all members present, Representative Ortiz, Pruitt, Kawasaki, Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Gren, Guttenberg, Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Before we start, reminder if folks can mute their phones. On today's schedule, we are going to be taking up the final amendments, which are 12 through 17, on the permanent fund portion of HB 115. And so we will bring HB 115 version E back before the committee for the purpose of addressing our final amendments to the permanent fund portion of the bill. And so I'd like to, I think before we go to the sponsor's aid, I think we're going to go to Amendment 12, which from what I understand, we are rolling that to the bottom of the calendar. Is that correct, Representative Thompson? Amendment 12 is
yes,
being rolled to the bottom.
Chair, that's correct. We're going to roll it to the bottom.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thompson. So with that, we will move to Amendment number 13. Representative Thompson, if I could get a motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move Amendment 13.
Okay. Are any objections?
I'll object for discussion.
Okay. We have an objection. Representative Thompson, if you could explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Amendment 13 creates a draw limit. The limit threshold will be set at $1.2 billion, and once triggered, the POMB will be reduced by $1 for every $1 of oil production tax and royalties that exceeds $1.2 billion. The governor's and the other bodies' bills, this draw limit will reduce permanent fund expenditures during times of higher oil revenues. Without this provision, there would be no guidance on how to spend money during times of flush oil revenues. And we would take the full POMB draw even though oil revenues were sufficient to cover state spending. By leaving the permanent fund earnings in the fund, when other revenues cover state costs, it will allow the permanent fund yield higher earnings, which translates into larger fund, larger POMB, and larger PFDs. Just like a normal person would manage their money, this amendment will direct the state to not spend from our savings, or in this case, our investment fund, during times of high income, et cetera, for oil, et cetera. And that's the gist of what Amendment 13 does.
Okay, and just for clarification, Amendment number 13 is 30-LS0125/E for echo 0.25. And with that, we've got a few questions. Representative Kawasaki and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess there's a question for the sponsor of the amendment. So then I guess the graph is basically telling us what we're doing. So basically, if the price of oil were to go So if the price of oil were to be right around 105 with the payout limit or about 85 without the payout limit, that would be essentially that. Basically what you're saying is that during those times of high oil prices, you've got all this revenue without the payout limit. With a payout limit, though, you're not going to see increased available revenue available for expenses until you reach about $105. Is that right?
Representative Thompson?
It sounds correct, because the way we're set up right now, even if suddenly we had, through the chair, a tremendous amount of revenue come in, we would still do the draw even though we don't need it. So let's put a cap on what we're going to be able to draw. We don't want to just increase spending because we have that much available. And this would slow down that process to where we aren't growing government more and more.
Through the chair.
Follow up, Representative Kawasaki.
Just one follow up. When all of these things are really tied to a commodity like oil, which is really volatile, you can agree or disagree on whether it was the right course of action or the wrong course of action, but we did things like fuel triggers for the marine highway system because the price of oil was high, then the price of motor fuels became high. We reduced the motor fuel tax to zero for a holiday. Governor Palin gave everybody an extra $1,000 in their dividend. I mean, there were things, we spent more on the LIHEAP program for heating and energy assistance for people that can't afford heating and energy. And I guess doing this seems like it might derail things that we had done in the past, which, again, whether they're good or bad, I think it's up to the legislatures of the future to kind of decide that. If I don't know if you want to address that.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I see that the Commissioner of Revenue is in the room, and I wouldn't mind having him comment on this.
Sure. Commissioner Hoffbeck.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. This provision that essentially starts to turn off the draw on the permanent fund as oil prices increase has been embedded in the governor's plan for use of the permanent from day one. The thought being that we want to use the dividend for a lot of purposes, and one of them is to reduce volatility in spending. Because as spending grows, it's very difficult to pull it back, and we all realize that. And so with this, it's kind of a shutoff valve that creates a situation where, as oil prices recover, the draw on the dividend or the draw on the permanent fund would be reduced. So it's just kind of an automatic throttling back of the amount of revenues available, and it is a part of what allows for the 5.25 draw. To be sustainable over the entire length of the modeling that we did, is that you assume that at some point in time you're going to have some of these reduced draws on the permanent fund, and that allows you to take bigger draws during low revenue years.
We've got questions from Representative. Was there a follow-up? No. From Representative Guerra and then Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've got a different chart in front of us than is on the screen. The chart we have in front of us is a POMV plan only, which, I mean, that's one of the debates in the building right now. And the chart on the screen is, I guess, POMV plus the income tax. Can we take a look at the chart on the screen that we're looking at in front of us, the POMV only chart, so I can ask some questions on that? Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
A few questions. First of all, Commissioner Hoffbeck, at least on the piece of paper I have in front of me, I can't see the screen as well. It doesn't seem like this would kick in until somewhere over $80 a barrel. Is that correct? Somewhere around there?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. It's around $75 a barrel that it kicks in.
Okay. And through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
I think we're arguing over something we're not going to see for many, many, many years. So when does the oil price forecast have oil prices going up to that $75, $80 a barrel range, about 8 years from now?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, no, it's not that far out with the fall forecast. I think it's just 4 or 5 years out where we start seeing something close. Oh, 75? Yeah, 5, 6, 7. I'd have to pull it up. I don't recall right offhand, but it's a few years out.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
I'll take a look. As I recall, it's 7, 8 years out before we hit those prices, but we'll find that out. The book says what it says. And then why is it that the deficit continues longer with this revenue payout limit than without it? The deficit continues up until $100 a barrel with the payout limit.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, with the modeling that Ledge Finance is doing, it shows that by setting the limit at 1.2, you don't quite make it to a fully balanced budget without some additional revenue sources, indicating that 1.2 might be too low as far as being able to get to a balanced budget if all you did was the permanent fund. The revenues modeling I don't think leaves quite as big a gap as Ledge Finance, as we use probabilistic modeling. They're using deterministic modeling.
Through the chair, I guess just a couple comments. Number one, I think we're dealing with probably oil prices of, we're not sure whether it's 5 years projected, 7 years, 8 years out from now. It extends the deficit, and what it says basically is we're going to tell a legislature 5, 7, 8 years from now that they still can't really have a capital budget to deal with deferred maintenance, which I understand that the university is close to, well, is over $500 million, not to mention the maintenance around the state. And, you know, we have different views around the table. I think there are those people who want to add another, in this legislature, there are those who want to add another $1 billion of cuts to the budget on top of the 3.4 we have so far. There are some who don't, but I think coming up with a formula for what's going to happen 6, 7 years from now is not the right way to go. I think people should elect the legislators that they trust, and I don't think we should come up with a formula for legislatures 5, 6, 7 years from now.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I haven't been through this sequence of looking at this before, but I'm looking at the left-hand side, and it looks like, you know, deficits go away at about $82, somewhere between 80 and 85, that we're out of deficit if we have a flat budget for the, I mean, this isn't a time sequence, but it's assuming the same budget level 8 years from now or whenever we would reach that $80, $85. Or whatever that price is, and if it's 8 years from now, it's assuming the exactly the same UGF budget, as I'm, or maybe we'll get the modelers up here and find out. But I'm looking at the right-hand one, and it says to me that even at $100 a barrel, we still have a deficit whenever that price occurs. Am I misunderstanding that?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is a snapshot in time. So this is FY18 production, and so it's not a time series on production. It's not a time series on other revenues. It's just simply if you had FY18 production and you had a certain oil price, that's how much deficit that you would have to be covered. And if you got above $75 a barrel, then under the draw, the payout limit, then you start seeing this offset with the draw. But it's a snapshot of a single point in time, which is FY18 budget.
You follow up, Representative Seaton?
Well, I guess I'm. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm still trying to figure it out. So this is saying that if we would follow this model, and at this point in time, if we had $95 a barrel, we would still have a deficit to our our unrestricted general fund budget, would still have a deficit at $100 a barrel if we followed this model with $1.2 billion.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yes, you'd still have a small deficit.
Okay, next up, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I see these charts, and I've seen this before, I think we saw it last year we were discussing this, I always have to wrap my head around exactly what it's trying to do, and sometimes I try to make them three-dimensional. But this is assuming a lot of things are static. You know, revenue, the timeline, the UGF, the POMB payout. But if you go from the one without a payout limit, right, from left to the one on the left to the one on the right, which is in some ways you could say a dollar to zero, which I'm not sure zero is the right number, but if you went to 80 cents, I mean, if you put intermediary charts in there, would it show what you would assume it would look like? It would be an incremental changes based upon the percent change of a dollar. Would that be a safe assumption, or does that not happen?
Before you answer, if I could just get Ledge Finance maybe to come up just to help answer some of these questions if needed. But Commissioner Hoffbeck.
To the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, you're saying that if it was something less than a dollar.
If you went to 90 cents, then to 80 cents, then to 70 cents all the way through, would the graph just be consistent change, or are there other variables, are there other things that happen in the modeling?
Through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, it should just simply adjust everything downward or upward, depending which way you go. But I can let them push the button, and we can see. But remember, this is a single snapshot in time.
Yeah.
It's not a time series.
Right.
And that's what makes this graph kind of hard to look at, because you start thinking, okay, as prices grow over time, this is what's going to happen. That's not what this is saying. It's just saying, at a certain price, this is what your budget looks like.
Right, and it doesn't take Mr. Chair, if I may, and it doesn't take inflation into effect or population. I mean, lots of things aren't in here. That it's just a snapshot.
Correct.
And one of the things I'm worried about with the limit is, like we've talked about here, is ability to have a capital budget, right? And when does that be? You know, are we constricting future legislators to be able to operate efficiently? I mean, I know the assumptions are that as soon as we have money, we're spending it, but that's not always been the case. Sometimes we've actually put money back in and occasionally build things we actually need. But it's a concern I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. I do have three folks with questions. It's Representative Pruitt, Ortiz, and Kawasaki. I'm not sure if Ledge Finance, after Representative Thompson made his introductory remarks, if you had some things that you wanted to go over. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to say anything, and then we'll go to the other questions.
Through the Chair, Rob Carpenter with Ledge Finance. I have Alexi Painter here. We're going to tag team. I didn't know if you wanted to walk through each slide and explain the parts, and then maybe people might understand it a little better, and then we could go with questions.
Is that okay? The folks who had questions, if you wanted to ask them now, or if you felt comfortable with them moving forward.
Well, can I just one of the things that's in the conversation?
Representative Pruitt? Sure.
It's less a question. I think what's important to recognize is we're only talking about FY18 here. We're not talking about 19. We're not talking about 20. We're not talking about 30. So we're just looking at that budget. We're also looking at fall forecast, which production is a piece of that whole discussion as well. So right now, we, of course, the recent conversations that we've heard from some of the discoveries, you know, while that's not next year, the year after, but, you know, looking a few years down the line, production will impact the amount, you know, whether when and whatnot we get to that 1.2 billion, but so it'll change slightly. As well as if we were to look at what we don't take by, let's say that we were at $80 now, that stays in the fund, and that influences how much is available for appropriation as well. So there's so many little pieces, and I think the commissioner was right. Looking at this one snapshot is really, really tough to look at. How does this affect the long-term? We've been looking at these models. You know, what role does it play in that those numbers into the future? And I think it's we're getting caught on this and not thinking about the fact that this is only 18 that we're discussing here. And I just wanted to say that because we keep coming back to this as this gospel and therefore being concerned with what we're doing. This provision is probably one of the most important things in my mind that we can do. If we don't put some sort of limitations, then the opportunity for growth, it's not just that the growth in government, it's what happens when things come down again. Because we will grow the budget. Let's say that we didn't put the cap on and we have $120 per barrel oil. We will increase our spending. That's what we do. And then all of a sudden it will come back down, and now we don't have the permanent fund to go back to. If 115 were put in place, we won't have income tax to go to. All of our places to go to fill in our holes won't exist. So how do we stop us from spending? And we need to have some sort of limit. So anyway, that's my my plea that we do, we allow this to go forward, but maybe we need to look at other years so you can understand what just 18 is one snapshot. This is really important.
I had Representative Ortiz and Kawasaki in the queue. I don't know if you wanted to hold off until after they do the presentation, or did you want to ask your questions now?
I'm okay with holding off. It's fine.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
I just wanted to echo what my colleague to the left said, because it is a snapshot in time. It's hard to wrap my head around. Can you do this? Can you do the using the revenue source book? Can you just do one scenario per year so we can look at it? Could you do that? I'm sure. I know you can. Just because it's a snapshot in time, it's hard for me to figure out what this looks like next year and the year after that and the year after that. And I think it, depending on oil fines or the revenue source book that says we're going to be fairly flat and that prices aren't going to rise, I think it's till 2025 to the $80 mark. I think I'd like that for comfort, at least, to know. Thanks.
Mr. Carpenter, I'll let you proceed as you see fit on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kawasaki, as you said, it's a snapshot in time, and to do a time series of this is, we couldn't figure it out, basically. Given that you have your budget variable, which is in this situation is $4.3 billion, it's the black line. For all oil prices, it's just assumed $4.3 billion. Now, the other key part is this, as Commissioner Hoffbeck said, this is all for only FY18. So we're just assuming that snapshot in time, and the left side being without the payout limit and the right side being with it, you have the bottom bars being your non-volatile revenue stream, the unrestricted general fund revenue stream, which would be like your corporate income tax, other items like that. You have your POMV payout assumed at all prices. It would be exactly the same, $2.5 billion or whatever the number is. And then you have your blue bars, which are your volatile revenue, which would be the royalty and production tax, which grow significantly at each price of oil. And at that budget for the year, which is $4.3 billion, you have a fiscal deficit at $20 a barrel, which is eventually closed at around $75, $80, I see. And then you have extreme surpluses beyond that. The idea of the revenue limit is now on this side is that right around $75, $85 a barrel, your POMV payment, which was continuous and static at every price of oil, now at the $75 price starts to drop $1 for $1 over that $1.2 billion, which was the amount that was determined in SB 28 last year, that and from the governor's office was deemed the appropriate level at that time. That amount could be adjusted. We can do that here later on if you'd like to see that. And as that dollar for dollar kicks in, eventually by the $95 price or just past that $100, the POMV payout is zero. And that does, to I think Representative Guerra's point, you still have a fiscal deficit under that scenario, which seems a little counterintuitive, but it has either, some people like it because it would pressure for more budget cuts. Some people like it because it would pressure for more increased revenue, other revenue options.
Really quick on that point, we've got Commissioner Hoffbeck, and then in the queue we had Representative Ortiz, who stepped out here, but then Kawasaki and Gren. So we'll just take a moment here, and then Thompson. Commissioner Hoffbeck.
And just to follow up on what Rob said there at the end, what's critical is that this was just a piece of the total fiscal plan. This was never intended to entirely close the fiscal gap. Within the governor's plan, that still required one or two or both actions, which is additional reductions in spending or additional revenue sources or some combination of the two. This was never intended to close the fiscal gap by itself.
Thank you. Next up, we've got Representative Kawasaki.
That was it.
Okay. Representative Gren.
Could I ask you to scroll down the sheet? I'm just looking at some of these exacts, some of the actuals, just for my notes.
Mr. Chairman, these really weren't for public consumption. These weren't formatted at all for public consumption. This is just just to be clear.
If you can leave it for a minute.
Okay, so next up, or Representative Grin, did you have a question, or are you just going to look at that?
Is there a column with a deficit number? Is that?
This is the, through the chair, Representative Grin, this is the deficit without the limit, and, I'm sorry, with the limit and without the limit.
And that's starting at 20, going through 20, 30, 40, 50 on the rows?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. Next up, we've got Representative Thompson and then Guerra. Or actually, I see Representative Ortiz is back. Did you have a question, Representative Ortiz? And then we'll go to Thompson, Guerra, and Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is a question for the carrier of the amendment. Yesterday, you spoke about the concern, rightly so, about the ability for us to hopefully someday return to a significant capital budget. Does this particular proposal impact that ability in any way to returning to that potential? Do you see it?
Representative Thompson?
I didn't hear that.
Could you repeat that, Representative?
Okay. How does this particular proposal impact on the possibility of us returning to a significant capital budget in the state of Alaska?
That's probably going to have, through the chair, I think that's probably going to have to come through in a separate bill with possibly a look at something in addition. But my concern right now is that we're trying to limit the future legislators after us from growing the budget when they have excess funds. This is going to try to maintain how much money's in the permanent fund, in the permanent fund earnings. You know, we need to keep that in mind. And I think that's a big part of why we're doing this, is that we're trying to work towards that four times amount. And this would, if prices went up, and again, I have to reflect back to the member from Anchorage, yeah, prices are volatile. We don't know when they're going to do what. We had no idea they were going to drop to $28 a barrel. At the same time, if we have a war breakout, well, they're going to climb sky high. So we don't know, but we have to figure that this is going to be something we can depend on if the prices go crazy on us and we do have that revenue. You know, we aren't projecting on this in 2018 increase so far in throughput. You know, we're 50,000 barrels a day more than what the projection was in the fall revenue. It could be up even higher next year, and they're projecting lower for next year. So this is something I think that we need to really look at to make sure that we do keep money in that. The more money we can keep in the permanent fund, the better I think we'll be in the future. What's going to happen, you know, the size of the permanent fund over time? What does this do? Not having a draw limit increases or decreases the permanent fund versus having a draw limit? Which one is going to be most beneficial to us preserving our funds? If I could ask that question of our experts here, because we're not experts.
Okay, let me just make sure. Are there any follow-ups, Representative Ortiz? Okay, thank you. So the question to the panel?
Good. Representative Thompson, through the chair, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. We can show an example, perhaps that may help, show in the model, change the price for 1 year to much higher than the forecast, and then see how it impacts having the limit versus not, if that would be helpful.
Where are the prices here?
Here, you take it.
I gotta turn around.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
Okay, yeah, all right.
So, this is with a price of $90 for FY18 and then returning to the fall forecast. So, the impact of that is that there's still this spike because not all of the revenue goes away, but above the budget line. However, it is the POMV draw is significantly less, and so we assume that the remainder of that spike would go to the CBR rather than spent, but the remainder of that would stay in the earnings reserve account. And because of the four times provision, a good deal of that would then go into the permanent fund principal through inflation proofing. So the value of the permanent fund at the in FY26 is 103% of real value, and you can see if we turn the draw limit off, or this is actually without the draw limit, that's why, sorry, 103% without the draw limit. So if we turn this on to the, as the amendment shows, so if we turn this on, then you see that spike goes away quite a bit, and now we're at 105% of real value in FY26. So we'd have a higher value in the permanent fund, the CBR balance would be lower, but the permanent fund value would be higher in future years. And I hope that helps answer the question.
Thank you.
Okay, following Representative Thompson in the queue, we're Representative Guerra and Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One comment and a question. I mean, governing 7 years from now by formula says that, okay, that legislature can't raise the dividend. If we don't need the money, that legislature can't raise the dividend. That's one of the problems I have. The other problem I have is, in my personal view, at some point I would like to see pre-K in the state and a university that isn't continually cut. So I don't see how this achieves that goal. But the question I have is, you know, at this point, this is so many years out there. We don't hit $78 a barrel under the fall revenue forecast till 2024. And then if you use the fall revenue forecast for production, I suspect we wouldn't even hit this draw limit, not by $80 a barrel, but probably not till way above that. Is there any way you could put 2024's production amount, forecast of production amount in? No.
Representative Guerra, through the chair, we do not have production as a variable in our model.
Then I guess through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Were production to go down as the fall revenue forecast predicts, and nobody knows, but the last forecast we have is the fall, were production to go down as the forecast predicts, then the point where this would kick in, instead of being like $80 a barrel, would be at a much higher price. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that is correct.
And I guess we have no idea of guessing what that price is, but this may not kick in for 7 years, for 10 years, for 12 years. I think we're spending too much time on a provision that is sort of mythical and doesn't meet my personal principles. So.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Next up, we've got Representative Seaton and then Wilson.
Thank you. When you had the previous slide up there, you had 115 with the income tax in it. So can you show us what that looks like without the income tax?
This doesn't. Oh, wow.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm looking at here is still, without having significant other revenue, it looks like under the top left chart there, we're having significant deficits, we're having declining reserves over time with and this is with the revenue limit in, and it seems like that's what we're trying to avoid through this entire fiscal plan. So I guess I'm just concerned that even looking at a snapshot in time, if we're building a plan that says even at $95 a barrel we're going to have a significant deficit, therefore we have to have either significant other revenues or we have to be taking draws from the exactly what we're told not to do, is going to taking ad hoc draws from the revenue or from the permanent fund earning reserve. This almost forces us to take either CBR or ad hoc draws from the earnings reserve, because even at those kind of oil prices, we don't get to a balanced budget. So I guess I mean, that's why we're doing the plan we do that has an income tax in there. It takes care of that and does that, but I'm not sure that we're aided by this structure that says, gee, the permanent fund dividend amount that we take out is not going to be sufficient to generate a balanced budget. So that's what it appears. So maybe you guys can model it for me and show me where I'm wrong.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I just wanted to make sure that this is showing just 1 year of $90, and then going back to the fall forecast, if we had just flat. So this is flat $90 every year, not adjusted at all. So that there would be very little deficit the first 2 years, although there is still a deficit, and then it would appear again under the growing budget model, the OMB 10-year plan.
For the record, that was Mr. Painter. Next up, we've got Commissioner Hoffbeck. And then
through the chair, Representative Seaton, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. I think the one thing we need to keep in mind is that we're looking at FY18 budget, FY19 budget. The draw limit is something that is anticipated will occur sometime in the future. And if you take the draw limit out, the net effect is you have to start thinking about whether you can do a 5.25 draw for any significant period of time. If you can't do a 5.25 draw and you have to reduce it to 5 or something less, now what you've done is you've actually increased the gap in the current year in the short term versus closing the gap by taking it out. And so, you may close the gap out 7 years or 8 years from now by not having it in there, but you may have to reduce your draw right from the get-go in order to be able to sustain that. And so what you do is you actually by taking it out, you actually make the problem worse in the next couple of years rather than better.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton.
And that's if you don't have any other revenue, you're only depending upon the earnings reserve to the permanent fund to supply all the state revenue, then that'd be the case. But if you were trying to have things more diversified, which is a term we've used quite a lot, then a 5 draw is more stable, 5% draw that we've had in 115 with some diversified revenue gets us to the point of having deficits taken away anyway, doesn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, absolutely. It makes the gap bigger that you need to fill, but by diversifying how you fill the gap, you create stability long term.
Thank you,
Representative Seaton. Next up, we've got Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So where does volume come in, the increase of volume? I mean, I see price as being a part of that. Is that just built into the modeling, or we just primarily go – again, just a picture in time with a set amount of volume, a set price.
Through the chair, Rob Carpenter, Ledge Finance. Representative Wilson, this is, we're assuming fall forecast production that we only bought varied price. We don't have a variable for production because it's a one-year snapshot. To change production in that short amount of time is not realistic versus a price shift could be fairly quick.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
But if the volume does increase, so it wouldn't be just about the price. So, I mean, I think it's another issue I think they were having is that, which is, it's almost like it shows like one day in 2018 on the budget what that would look like. And if we get more and more barrels down, then we'll gain it that way as well. So also, we had a comment a while ago about the payout of the dividend. So if this were to take effect and we had more volume, would that make it so that the dividend couldn't get higher? That would actually keep it the same level or lower if we were to adopt this amendment?
Mr. Carpenter?
Through the chair, could you repeat the question?
Representative Guerra, I thought I heard that he said that if we did the spending limit, that it would make it so that the dividend, we couldn't make a payout, a larger payout to the dividend than where we are right now. I'm just trying to verify whether that's true or not, because that's not how I see it.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wilson, the dividend is excluded from the revenue limit itself. So that calculation occurs first, and then the 70% would be subject to the limit of the POMB. However, I think Representative Garrett was saying that I don't want to put words in his mouth, but if additional dividend was of interest, this would theoretically limit that because you're reducing the remainder of the POMB payout. But I would argue with myself and say you guys are subject to appropriation. You can do what you choose because this is in statute.
Follow up?
So did I hear correctly that this is in the governor's bill? I know we're not supposed to talk about either, but I'm just trying to, since they're the ones kind of carrying the bill. Is this spending limit or this type of spending limit in the governor's bill currently?
To the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, it is.
Follow up.
So you kind of heard the concerns, and I can't imagine that you haven't had these same type of discussions internally. So can you just give me a little bit more detail why this is the right way to go? Because I think it is, but I'm still kind of confused between the questions on that one snapshot. So what do you think would be able to be accomplished by an amendment like this that wouldn't happen if we didn't adopt it? I mean, what is the real reason why you thought this was so important to put it in the bill that the governor has?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there's several components to it. One is the concern that if you had high oil prices while you were doing a full permanent fund draw, you could actually overheat spending. You could be in a situation where you're actually adding a permanent fund draw on top of revenue that was more than sufficient on its own to fund government services. So that's one reason. Second was just to take volatility of spikes out, because typically price doesn't go up in a nice steady fashion. And I mean, it goes up and down and up and down and up and down. And so what this would do is when you get into the range where you're starting to turn the draw on the permanent fund on and off, you tend to take those peaks and valleys out. You end up with a more stable revenue stream, easier to budget, easier to do long-term planning on. For instance, a one-year spike might be able to get you a capital program, but if the temptation is that you use it to now do pre-K and other things that Representative Guerra talked about, now you're in trouble the next year if the price drops back down. And so it does kind of a smoothing on that. And the third was because you assume that at some point in time you're going to be able to start turning the valve off, that it does allow you to take larger draws initially.
One more question, Mr. Chairman.
Your follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Thank you so much for the latitude. So where did the spending cut part come into it? I mean, I guess it's kind of hard because you don't know what it's going to be. Probably nothing, but, you know, if that, because that's not part of it, and I know we've heard, you know, of making so many cuts every year, and again, around the table, everybody has a different opinion on that. So if we were to say so much, whether it was going to be flat spending or it was going to go down some, how would that come into play with the chart? Or is that just not, or are we just talking about keeping things flat funded or inflation proofing or where does spending, current spending, and how it's going in that chart?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. The again, this is a FY18 assumed budget, which at with the PYMV reduced year dollar for dollar over $1.2 billion, you still maintain a fiscal deficit in these higher price years. So that implies a pressure to reduce the budget or generate additional revenues in a, from another method. If you were to think of this as a let's say a couple years later and the budget was the same or had grown or had shrunk, this line was down here, you wouldn't have a deficit necessarily. Or as you mentioned, production declining or increasing. In the fall forecast, I know there was some questions about what production and what price we were assuming here. So by FY23, it was up around, the forecast predicts $75 a barrel. But production has dropped to 391,000 from 470 under the fall forecast. Now there's been, as Representative Pruitt said, several fines, and I'm not sure those will come on that quickly, but there could be increased production by then or a flattening or a decreasing of the decline. But that would, going back to the other slide, your blue bars, if production was less, they would be lower, and your P&V wouldn't be reduced by as much because that $1.2 billion. And actually, maybe that leads right into, I mean, you can adjust the $1.2 billion level if you made it higher. For example, the POMV kicks in. I mean, basically, your deficits are closed over that those same prices. At the same time, if you were to adjust the dollar for dollar to say 80 cents, that also closes that range of prices where the deficit is reduced.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And I think that may answer Representative Seaton's question. Representative Seaton?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to think about this whole thing a little longer than, one modeling session this afternoon to figure out how it all works. And would you go back to 115 with the income tax and show how that worked into this call?
To the chair, Representative Seaton, this actually was with the income tax right here.
Okay. And yeah, so this is the slides we have here, but if you go back, you had this with an income tax in your chart before, when we were trying to figure out the, yeah. Oh, down below there, yeah. Oops. So then it, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm seeing that the deficit, it goes away at $65 or $70 a barrel, is it? And in either case, with on the right or the left, the deficit disappears at about the same time. And where is the income tax on the
Mr. Chairman,
where is that revenue shown?
Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, through the chair, the blue bars, the income tax, it's not built in the red, it's in the blue.
It
is in red. Okay, so the income tax is in the non-volatile section, which pushes the whole chart up, and therefore those orange bars close under that scenario. So if you go, so basically, these, like, as I said, these red bars shift up with the income tax revenue, therefore closing these deficits.
Commissioner Hoffbeck?
And just for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner Revenue. And the reason that you see it closes at the same time is you're actually closing the deficit before the draw reduction starts to occur, and that's why it happens at the same time on either chart.
Point of clarification, Representative Guttenberg.
On the income tax, when you put one in, what is that value? What does it represent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, it's just an on and off switch in the model.
Okay.
It means
well,
one means.
Is there a rate built into it, or what's the?
Mr. Carpenter.
Through the chair, it really means one means on, zero means off. It could have been yes, no, or however we programmed it.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. It is the HB 115 value, and because this is FY 18, it only reflects half a year's collections because it would begin midway through the fiscal year.
Okay, we've got three questions. Representative Seaton, did you have a follow-up on your question? Okay. So we've got Representative Guerra, then Gren, and then Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I'm probably not going to change my mind on this one. I don't support this amendment at this time, but I guess in the event that we're going to have another hearing on this, I guess what I would like to see is I know it's very hard to model production changes and prices in a fluid way, but I guess I'd like to see a chart with 2024's forecasted production, because that's the year where we're forecasted to have about $80 a barrel oil, and just see what these things look like with 2024's forecasted oil production. I suspect it's going to move this payout limit way out. I still have my same concerns, constrained on increasing the dividend unless you use general fund money, constrained on ever having pre-K, constraint on ever returning the university to where I think it should be, personally, constrained on ever addressing our maintenance and our harbor and our road needs, constrained on ever fixing the Seward Highway from a very dangerous highway to a much safer one. So I'm not going to change my mind on this, but I would like to see what this would look like with 2024's production forecast.
Okay. Representative Gren and then Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yes, actually with what Representative Guerra mentioned, on the graph, the interactive graph part, there in the middle column, there is a row with capital budget FY19 through 26. Is that just a constant, that's what's projected for every year, just a locked-in average of 180 million?
Through the chair, Representative Gren, that is a flat $180 million that was based on coming up with some match and what we determined might be a reasonable amount for deferred maintenance and other things. It's completely subjective and arbitrary, but as good as
500.
Absolutely, I could change it right now.
Okay, next up we've got Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I realize this is a snapshot in time for 2018, but thinking out into the future, since we have a five-year lag on the POMB average, the more dollars that we leave in the permanent fund, the larger the POMB and the smaller the potential deficit. Isn't that kind of true? I mean, you know, looking at...
Representative Thompson, for the record, Randy Hoffnett, Commissioner Revenue, that's correct. I mean, the more that we can grow the permanent fund over time, the larger the draw, and the more money available for government services and for the dividend.
Thank you.
Okay. Follow up on that, Representative Seaton?
But following up on that, if we have a draw limit that is keeping us in deficit to $95 a barrel of oil, then we don't have a larger draw. We have a smaller draw. And so I guess that I think that a number of us are going to have to think about this a little more. And so we do have some other amendments. And, Mr. Chairman, what I would like to do is table this amendment for now so that we can come back to it. And then... look at the other amendments in the package, if that would be okay for now. I think that we've got enough information now for us to be thinking about this again. People haven't thought about it for a year, or some of us never thought about it. So,
Commissioner Hoffbeck.
For the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner Weber, one thing to point out, as we set this aside, is that the dividend is before the draw limit comes into play. So the dividend will always be paid based on the maximum draw, even if the actual amount of money being used for government services is turned down, the dividend is not.
Real good. Thank you. Representative
Seaton. So I'd move to table this amendment for now.
Okay, there's a motion to table. If there's no objection, we'll go ahead and Representative Pruitt.
Is there a reason we're tabling it as opposed to just moving it to the bottom of the pile like we did in one of the other ones?
Thank you.
I was just going to set it aside if there's no objection.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll do that. We'll roll it to the bottom. If there's no objection, seeing none. Okay, let's move to the next amendment here, and that is amendment number 14. Representative Thompson.
Mr. Co-Chair, Amendment number 14 and Amendment number 15 deal with the same subjects that we have already discussed, the permanent fund, inflation proofing, et cetera. And since we have discussed these here and on the floor and several other times, I'm going to withdraw Amendment number 14 and Amendment number 15.
Okay. Amendment number 14 and amendment number 15 have been withdrawn, and that moves us down to amendment number 16, which is Representative Wilson.
I move amendment number 16.
There's a motion. Is there an objection? There's an objection on motion on amendment number 16, which is 30-LS0125/E.23. Representative Wilson?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to do a conceptual amendment of amendment number 16.
Okay, and what's your conceptual amendment?
I'd like to delete, starting with and on the third line, and making the legislative action contingent on the advisory vote receiving an affirmative majority vote.
Okay, is there an objection? Hearing no objection, the conceptual amendment to Amendment 16E.23 is adopted. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, why I removed that so that the public knows they didn't necessarily see the legal services memo that we had. We can have an advisory vote, but to make the legislation contingent upon that would be unconstitutional. So I don't want to do something unconstitutional. But what this does is, you know, these are some major changes that we're doing. And it's, I remember having this discussion a little bit last year, and somebody made a comment that I, you know, didn't want to make the hard decisions. I can make hard decisions, but this is one of those that affects all of Alaskans. And I've heard a lot from my constituents and others, at least in my area, that they believe that this is big enough that they feel that they should have a right to be able to at least weigh in on it. This is an advisory vote, so the legislature wouldn't have to abide by it, but it would cause conversation, and I think that it's necessary when you're making this kind of a move.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think that one of the big things we're doing in 115 is trying to address a problem that we have and to get it fixed. And to do this, we wouldn't be able to move forward until we waited around for maybe, unless we had a special election, I'm not sure if that's in here, we would be waiting until after the next general election. And if we were doing that, we would be basically have used up our CBR. We'd be under the status quo until then. And so I'm opposing this amendment because simply what it does is it delays any decision that the legislature really makes. And so that doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, we have a problem that we really have to solve, and we've been expending this work and in both bodies and the administration trying to craft a solution that we can go forward with to solve the problems of the state. And to say that we're basically going to suspend all our work to get to a solution until after there's an advisory vote isn't where I want to go, so I'll oppose it.
I just want to mention at some point we will need to address what I assume is a technical amendment. Looks like we may need to remove on page 2, lines 8 through 10, the conditional effect language. I'm not sure what that is, and if there's anybody who could speak to that, can be done now or later. Is there, Jane, is there anybody who needs to speak to this?
Mr. Chairman, I think I probably need to buy a minute. I'm pretty sure what this does is make a contingent. It follows along with taking it out of the title. We also need to take it out of the bill as well. So I'm going to withdraw my amendment to amendment number 16 and restate so that we take care of both of those issues.
Okay. So you're withdrawing your amendment?
To the amendment.
Amendment number 16.
Okay. Quickies. Okay, House Finance is back on record, and Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 16.
Amendment 2 to Amendment Number 16, and if you could explain your amendment.
Yeah, the conceptual amendment.
Actually, is there an objection?
I'll object myself.
Okay. We've got an objection from Representative Guerra. If you can explain your amendment, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I got it right, so I figure we have good staff that's listening in and others. So this would be on page 2, section 18, lines 6 to 10. And what this would be, it's basically taking the second part out, making it to where the legislation is not contingent on the vote. Again, this would be an advisory vote within itself.
Okay. And with that is the objection. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, is Section 19 is also if under Section 18 of this Act, so if we're removing Section 18, I'm not sure that all flows.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Are we planning on passing any of these amendments out today, or are we kind of thinking about them? Because what I would prefer to do, if it would be okay with you, is roll down with the other ones that are down there and just make sure with Ledge Legal that we have it correct so that we're not trying to be lawyers at the same time.
Is the any objection from the committee, Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, before we get there, because I appreciate that. If we're not going to deal with it now, then let's fix it. But that's why I want to ask the question right now. I want to ask about the special election portion of it. Do we have an idea of what that would cost? I would assume that would probably be done in November or some. So I don't know. I don't know. And so my question is, first, do we understand the cost? Second is, let's say that we didn't do special and we decided to allow it to be in the next regular session. And I don't know if the member from North Pole can answer this question. I suspect there's a high possibility of an attempt for some sort of a referendum. I think we should just accept that there will be an attempt. Let's say that they are successful. This is where this goes in. Would this, if we were to not have a special election, and we were to move it to a regular election, would those two somehow counteract or conflict in some capacity? I don't know, and I really I would love to know that before we have the member go back and try to fix this and then come back and still have some of those concerns. So those are a couple of concerns that I'd have for both of these two.
Okay. Next up, we've got Representative Guerra.
Mr. Chair, I think the maker of the amendment, I don't want to say this wrong, but I think what she's trying to do is address the legislative legal memo that says making this bill contingent on an advisory vote is unconstitutional. I think she could easily just make that a conceptual amendment, and then we can vote on the amendments and make some progress and see what the bill looks like.
Representative Wilson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think some good questions have been brought up, and I just want to make sure that I'm taking out the right parts, and that if the citizens of Alaska decide to do something like a referendum, I definitely don't want this to get in the way. So I think if we're not going to move it anyway, and we're going to have to come back because of the other amendments that are down there at the bottom, I would prefer to get it right. And if I find out that I would get in the way of a referendum and cause grief to people who would do something like that, then I won't bring it back. But I don't want to put things in the bill that's going to cause problems, because it's not that I don't want to necessarily move certain sections of it. I just do feel that people have a right to have a say-so when we're making such major policy changes beyond that portion of it. And I just want to address that we can still do our work here and still have an advisory vote, because, again, this won't be contingent. So this bill could still pass this year, and a vote could still happen, because we could go, it would just add a different conversation, and it would then also force people to go out and have the conversation throughout Alaska. So it doesn't stop what's happening here. It just gives an extra step to make sure that citizens of Alaska really get to be part of the conversation. But I don't want to put something halfway together, so I would prefer to have time to fix it. If you don't want me to have time to fix it, then I would have to, I guess, withdraw it. But I would hope we're going to come back to those others. I don't see what the problem would be to come back with this.
What is the will of the committee? Either we can roll it, or somebody can introduce a conceptual amendment to strike line 6 through 7. Representative Seaton.
Representative Kawasaki.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks. So we keep rolling down these amendments. We've already rolled number 12 and 13 down to the bottom, and then we stopped, or we did, or 14 and 15 were withdrawn. So this is, these are the only two amendments we're really going to be able to take up tonight. I'd rather just get them done. So we just have the one amendment that's really complex, dealing with the payout limits.
If we proceed with these, it sounds like we'll need somebody to introduce the conceptual amendment to remove the language. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I think we really need legal if we're going to do this. I mean, if we want to deal with it tonight, then we need to make sure that we have somebody from legal to do it. But I don't know why we want to vote on it tonight if there could be a chance that they're not the right move to do, and we may not need it. Maybe it's not. I don't want to put something in the bill or even have a vote if we find out that it could actually get in the way for what citizens may prefer to do on their own. But, I mean, if we just have to move something tonight just so we said we did, then that's your call.
Who's up next here? Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, I would just say, I believe that the maker of the amendment, unless there's really an effort, and I get it, there's some complex pieces to this, that this has to be out in some sort of time frame, and it hasn't been communicated to me on exactly what that time frame would be. I mean, I would like to give her the opportunity. I think she's got a concern, and I appreciate the concern. I don't know that she'll get approval on this committee for her concern, but I think part of her. There's a potential that after some questions are answered, that maybe she's doing something that she doesn't want to do, and so she should. I really want to let her be able to present something that she feels comfortable with, and I don't see why giving her a little bit of time to deal with that wouldn't be in order.
Okay,
that's my two cents.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. We've got two questions, Representative Seaton and then Guerra.
Thank you. And I've just expressed the opinion before, but it was unclear whether we were on the amendment to the amendment or amendment. But on the amendment itself and the basic premise of the amendment of saying that we're basically not going to do our work, or we might do our work, but it's not going to be at all meaningful because we're going to go out for an advisory vote, which if the advisory vote goes one way or the other, what are we going to do then? We wouldn't be implementing anything, or we would be saying we're going to implement something and then we're going to come back and we're going to throw our work away. I mean, I don't think that that's our job. I think our job is to do a fiscal plan, and if someone wants to go to a referendum or an advisory vote, that's separate from what we're doing here. So, you know, I'm opposed to the basic part of the amendment that says, oh, let's forget it. Let's go for an advisory vote on this simple question of should we do anything or not, and then you know, because if we're going in that direction, there's no use doing all this work and struggling through all these details if we go through an advisory vote that says, oh, don't use the earnings reserve for anything, which means that the entire focus of what we're doing is negated. So I just like to go ahead and vote and say whether we're at least opposed to restricting basically not having a conversation that is really going to be meaningful, because it's maybe not legally contingent, but it's really going to be contingent on something that is going to have to be scheduled long after we try to go through and work through a plan.
Representative Guerra and then Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, it's a comment. It's not really on the amendment, so I don't know what leeway you want to allow people. It'll be brief.
Okay.
I will say I want to respect the member to my left's ability to make her amendments. I don't have a conclusion on what I'm about to say, but we're running out of time. We have a 90-day session. I don't see how we're going to finish our work with this 90-day session. We've been on the floor all week. We have very little committee time to do the work we have to get done. And if everything keeps getting delayed, I just don't know how we're going to get our work done. And it's almost like we're causing ourselves to run out of time.
Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, and I felt that we had kind of moved away from arguing the amendment there to trying to decide whether or not we should give time to the member. And so I'd like to focus on that piece. The substantial concerns were brought up as we sat down here today. I know I received and was handed out while I was sitting here the initial Ledge Legal memo, and so I understand the time discussion. I also understand that there's a desire by a member to make sure that she is putting forth something that she is confident will do what she wants. Now, I get that. There may be members that don't agree with where she's going, and it's been stated very clearly here. And I'm not actually arguing whether the amendment itself. I'm arguing for the ability of a member to be able to ensure that they're putting something out there that they feel comfortable with, and if it gets voted down, it gets voted down. But we shouldn't just... There's a difference between concept, and there's a difference between making sure that maybe there, because we've only heard from a couple members, maybe there are members that think that this would be a good idea. And in that case, she thinks she should be offering something that does what she intends it to do, so she can argue for the concept for which she believes she should argue for. So I thought that's what we were talking about was the time frame. As opposed to the actual validity of the amendment. I thought we'd moved kind of past that piece. But if we're going to end up arguing the amendment, then I think that's probably a disservice to the member who's trying to do what she feels is the best thing for her community and from her perspective.
I think whether or not we move forward or not is dependent on whether folks have an understanding of what this does. If it's a technical issue, and we all understand that, then but we understand the substance of the amendment, then we can move forward. But if it's more than that, then we can certainly hold it, and I'll accede to the will of the committee. Representative Grin.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was very comfortable with a conceptual amendment at the beginning, knowing that some of these questions have been raised, and the memo that we just had, an hour ago, raising more questions. I would like to see that the maker of the amendment would be given time to bring forth an amendment that she feels confident in the end goal of what the amendment would do for what her objective is. So I would speak to allowing her to revise this and have time to bring forth an amendment that is clear based on the questions and based on the memo that we just received this afternoon.
Representative Tilton and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to echo the words of the speakers two before me. We've already made a decision that there's things that we're going to be taking a little bit longer time to look at the previous amendment before this amendment. We've already decided that we're moving that forward. So I don't think that allowing the maker of this amendment the time to get these questions answered is actually adding a whole lot more time to our schedule, since we are already planning to add more time to the schedule with the amendment previous to this one. So I would like to allow the maker of this amendment the time to have this amendment redrafted and get the questions answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tilton. Next up, we have Representative Wilson and then Kawasaki, and then hopefully we'll wrap up and we'll figure this out. Representative Wilson.
First, my apologies, Mr. Chairman. I never thought about a referendum coming forward, and that's really the question I need to get answered. If this gets in the way of a referendum, that was never my intent. My intent was simply to vote on whether or not the committee thought it was important enough to give the people a chance through an advisory vote. It was not to slow down anything or reverse anything, because there would be time in between, and maybe people would see certain things working. It would actually be a positive thing. I'm not sure. But my biggest concern that I can't answer today is whether or not, if the public went out and decided to get signatures themselves and get something on the ballot, I would not want to have legislation in the way to prevent that from happening, especially when the whole purpose of the amendment is to give them the opportunity to have that voice. So that would just not make any sense to me. So if you want to vote on it now, that's fine. We can do that. But again, I'm sorry I never came up with the idea that a referendum may come before, and this may be actually a negative in that fashion.
Representative Kawasaki.
I'll pass.
Okay. With those comments in mind, let's go ahead and give the sponsors some time to clear this up and get questions answered and get a clean amendment back to us. Representative Wilson, does amendment number 17, does this also apply to that?
Same issue.
Okay, same issue. Okay. With that, we did roll one amendment down, and that was amendment number 12. That was Representative Thompson. Did we want to take that up now, or does that need to be maybe a tomorrow?
Tomorrow, better.
Okay.
Give me time to.
Okay, Representative Thompson, will roll that to tomorrow. So with that, is there anything else that tomorrow? So with that, we are we'll set aside HB 115. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Thursday, March 16 at 1:30 p.m. And at this meeting, we will have our second hearings on HB 56, commercial fishing loans, HB 81, Alaska energy efficiency loans, eligibility, HB 106 Civil Legal Services Fund. We will also have an introduction of HB 141, Alaska Workforce Investment Board. Of course, with what's going on the floor, that start time is subject to what we do on the floor and also the number of bills that we're able to take up. Since we're also pushing this to tomorrow, we'll have to be a little bit flexible. I did receive a note here Friday, 1:15, if somebody could clarify what that means.
I think that's the bill.
Friday. Oh, so we're moving this bill Friday. Okay. HB 115 will be moved to Friday. We will move hearing of the amendments to Friday for HB 115. So with that, we'll see everybody tomorrow sometime at 1:30 or after tomorrow. Thank you, everybody. And the time now is 5:46 p.m.